Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Kim Clijsters. Yeah, she was my idol. Like, I wanted to be like.
But she was
Kim
a hardcore, Clijster. Mainly a hardcore player, wasn't she?
Yeah, yeah. So was I.
Yeah. Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Bang on 7:30. It is Thursday morning. There's a lot going on in the world. Park Harrington leads the Open with a birdie on one. Shelburne are through to face Carrick in the next round of Champions League qualifiers. Ben Healy's in the yellow jersey after protecting it properly yesterday. And the Lions team has been named. So we're going to talk about all of that. We have Seamus Flanagan and Austin Gleeson coming at 8:05. We have Rachel Sheehan and Ciara Trant at 8:35. Chrissy Doran is going to talk about the Lions team from an Australia perspective. The big news is that Australia are essentially a scratch side now, with their best players all unavailable. Will Skelton is the latest one overnight who was out, and we will play you some Kingfisher goodness. They were in studio with us during the week, and it turns out they're not even on the bill at Croke Park on Sunday. I can't believe it. We say good morning, Colm.
Hiya, Jack.
What's your nervousness level today?
For the show?
No.
Not at all. It's a great show. There's so much happening, right? It's unusual now that we've festooned with live sport at 7:30 a.m. right, and it was a beautiful introduction to Erger. I think you really encapsulated, but just to go one step further, a beautiful first shot off the first tee from Padraig Harrington, who was delighted with life. I don't know, did you see his reaction to Scottie Scheffler's comments when he was asked about them? He just shrugged his shoulders and said, I love golf. I don't know what his message was, and he was beaming with smiles before he took the shot, and then afterwards, which was right down the middle. And at 6:50 a.m. on this Thursday morning, the 17th of July 2025, Padraig Harrington led the Open, getting a birdie on the first. He's back now to level par.
Ah.
Yeah. After three. And Tom McGibbon, who he's playing with, is plus two after three.
Oh, God, come on, Tom.
But what a start for Padraig Harrington. We'll just be off air by the time Shane Lowry tees off at 10:09, alongside Colin Morikawa and the man of the hour, Scottie Scheffler. And then Rory is this afternoon. Darren Clarke and Lee Westwood will be teeing off during the show, among others.
Two Danes, Hoggard and Olsson, are in the lead on one under. So I know you've managed to avoid my question properly.
I really heard it. And then Shells.
What's the level of fear?
What a result for Shells. $750,000, baby, straight away in the pocket. Last night they drew one all on the night, went through 2-1 on aggregate.
That's that British. You're quoting that British MMA fighter. Tell me, come on. How much fear do you have? It's just pure excitement.
About what? About the
All Ireland hurling final.
Team,
the imminent All Ireland hurling final.
I think Lions will be fine.
This weekend.
Should we go through the Lions team?
Ah, look at that.
Darragh Smith-Nathan has it.
Why don't you just embrace it? This is the best week of your life.
Go for the Lions team.
This is the best week of your life.
What do people want more right now? Do they want to talk about Cork, or do they want to hear
the first test
first team?
Okay, Darragh, give
us a say.
He's refusing to play along.
Go for that.
Good morning, lads. How's it going?
Hi.
Lions team is out. Our own Will O'Callaghan is reporting that it's a record 8 Irish starters in a Lions test team.
I mean, obviously it's an Irish record, is it? But there's been more from One Nation before. There were 8.
There's more Welsh.
There were 8 Welsh under Gallagher.
Yeah,
I just counted back the other day. Anyway.
Starting from fullback.
Oh.
Hugo Keenan. Tommy Freeman. Hugh Jones. Sion Tuipulotu. James Lowe. Finn Russell, Jameson Gibson-Park, Ellis Genge, this is going out to loose head prop, Ellis Genge, Dan Sheehan, Tadhg Furlong, Marwa Toja, Joe McCarthy, Tadhg Byrne at 6, Tom Curry at 7, and Jack Cohn at 8.
Mm-hmm. The bench now I'm interested in.
The bench might be more interesting than the actual.
Yeah. What have they gone? 5-3?
5-3 split.
Mm-hmm.
Ronan Keller, Andrew Porter, Will Stewart, Ollie Chesham, Ben Earl, Alex Mitchell, Marcus Smith, so no Owen Farrell, and Bundy Aki.
Wow. It's the first time since I think the 1896 tour there's no Welsh player involved at all. Yeah. Tough year for Wales. Overall, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts.
It's fine.
There's not too many surprises in the starting lineup. Tom Curry at 7 is
It's fine. I wouldn't have Marcus Smith anywhere near the best 23 players.
Well, we suggested the notion on Monday and scoffed at the idea of Marcus Smith being in a test squad.
However, James Tracy did explain that if you have Bundy as your 23, you need Marcus Smith because Bundy only covers one position really, whereas Marcus Smith can play fullback, and then all of a sudden you can jiggle everybody else around. So, I mean, that was the perfect illustration of it. I still think that, like, they're going to be fine here because the big news from Australia is that Will Skelton is out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a massive loss, really, isn't it? And their two-time player of the year, Valentini, is gone as well. So it's a fairly weakened...
So Valentini's a big ball-carrying back row, and they have nobody else to carry the ball, except maybe Will Skelton. I mean, I know he doesn't do that much of it anyway, but like maybe when you really need someone to go in and wreck things, you turn to him, he's gone. Yeah. And the replacement... number 7 is also gone because he got injured in the game against Fiji where they were resting Valentini. So, like, come on.
Obviously, the starting fly half, Lolasio, is also gone. So,
if this isn't a 20-point victory, I see the Irish media are obsessed with Joe Smith pulling rabbits from the hat. Is he going to manufacture players? Is there a hologram of something that he can beam down that somehow...
Well, he's not losing hope because he says that Valentini and Skelton will be back for the second test.
Yeah, he's not losing hope for the test
so
series. What do you say?
They keep him in the series this weekend.
And isn't that what you would say if...
It's the first test.
Even if the lads weren't.
You know, they're lucky that this is not an aggregate series that Lions will be out the gap after the weekend, points-wise. You can win whatever you want, doesn't matter.
The Lions do tend to come out in that first test quite tame enough, really, compared to... the second and third test. So maybe Australia do.
When's the last time they were this fancied heading into the first test, the Lions? That's the thing, isn't it? You know, I mean, this would be, now would be seen, can we go back to the B word from last week? You know, that's how heavily favoured they are here.
I'd say they're probably more favoured than they ever have been here, I would say. Probably.
James Tracy,
as weak as they ever have been, like, so.
James Tracy has been in touch proactively. Say he was nearly bang on. He said it's a great team.
Yeah.
He likes it a lot. He likes Earl and Chesham on the bench. I suppose that's the Ron Nogara logic, that options. And I would agree with you. I think the bench is almost, if not more interesting, as interesting.
No, Henry Pollock is very disappointing.
It is, yeah, but I kind of had a feeling that would happen, and I have a feeling that we will see him in one of the tests.
I know, but like, come on. Let's just see it. Like, this is...
It's only the first.
I know, but it would be way more crack having Henry Pollock on the bench. No, Josh van der Fleer. That's going to be tricky. I'm sure that was a difficult conversation. It's like, I was literally the best player in the world, and now I can't get in your shitty little made-up team.
It is mad being World Player of the Year and... not in the 23 in
I suspect
close
you took
proximity.
It better than that.
I was wondering that last year. It was like when Andy Fowle goes back to the day job, he has to explain these things, I guess. Or do you just accept them? But I suppose it's surprising enough.
Marcus Smith is somewhat actually unsurprising, really, because if anyone was going to have a 22 shirt on, it would have been him.
Pure versatility.
Just, well, that. But,
He's not good at the fullback.
But then there's also the fact that he's literally almost played every game as that position up until now. Like, he's held the 22 shirt for almost every game.
Right.
So it was clearly a plan from the start that ideally he would play that.
Is Marcus Smith now?
I mean, he's a 10.
Sub.
No, well, like, his no, he's a 10. Look.
He's a 10.
But he won't get next door near to playing 10.
He's not going to start at 10 now.
Yeah, but even coming on.
What do you mean? Like, well, like, of course.
If Russell goes down after two minutes, who's playing 10?
He's playing 10. Like, the plan is to keep Finn Russell on for 80 minutes, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it doesn't work out that way most of the time, so.
If they smash Finn Russell in the first 2 minutes, they have a chance of doing something in this game. Oh, Padraig Harrington sliding a power putt past, and he's going to one over. So, what started so well, he's back to one over through.
You'll always have had that 6:50 a.m. moment.
Yeah.
Where he was leading the open.
This whole Marcus Smith, he's very versatile. He's no good as a fullback. I think he's a very good rugby player, right? I actually think...
you don't.
I do. I think he's going to be a very good sub-10 for England for the next few years.
You don't want him to do well.
But why not?
I get a feeling that you're not
happy. Completely wrong.
I have a feeling you're
absolutely completely wrong. I think that he's obviously been grandfathered in. There's been pressure from the media that he's our darling and he's our version of Finn Russell, but he's nowhere near as good as Finn Russell. So He did very well coming off the bench against Ireland that time when he kicked the winner. Like,
yeah,
you know, he as a 10, right?
Yeah.
Or was he, did he come on as a...
He was a 10, yeah, he came on as a 10. Yeah.
I just don't think he's any good as a fullback. So the whole notion that he's versatile is actually erroneous piffle, to quote the man.
But he can play more than one position.
Well, I don't think they're bringing
but
him
he
on
can't play. He can't play the fullback position well. He's a weakness there. You bring him on at fullback and it's weak.
So who else would you have played? Yeah, would you have picked Owen Farrell? Instead of Marcus Smith?
I would definitely have picked... I would have picked Finn Smith ahead of him, and I would have picked Owen Farrell ahead of him. But, like, well, see, where's our back three cover? Can Tommy Freeman play fullback at the pinch?
Well,
I don't know.
If that's the case, then what if Keenan goes down after 5 minutes?
I don't know.
I think that's part of the thinking is that Keenan's been ill for, like, the last 2 weeks, and he has been great. So if he needs to come off, then...
You need one more of those winger hybrids... centre people, and maybe, I mean, they couldn't have put Osborne in the 23 from nowhere, but like they had to think that one through. That's, anyway,
yeah, most of those fullback options are out. Like, even Hansen could play fullback, but he's also out.
Yeah,
so I think
needs must is what you're
yeah
saying.
I think the hand has been forced a little bit,
although they haven't practicing for this, so yeah. All right, it's give us your thoughts. The Lions team is out, the golf is up and running, and Shelburne are through to the next round of the Champions League qualifiers. Nathan Murphy was at the game last night. Oh, he's not ready yet. Will we hear him talking to Joey O'Brien first, though? Yeah, so he's been talking with the Shelburne manager, the full-time manager now, no longer an interim manager, Joey O'Brien. Speaking with Nathan after a 1-1 draw last night, goes through 2-1 on aggregate.
Joey, huge result for Shelburne. How satisfied are you with that?
Yeah, no, great. As you said, a great night for the football club, great night for the players, the fans out there, fantastic. So, yeah, delighted to be in the next round.
I think that first 45 minutes was maybe the most entertaining I've seen all year. I suspect you didn't feel the same way.
Nah, listen, there was loads in it, wasn't it? Like, I suppose we had the substitutions. Obviously, I think they had a chance. We obviously scored, took the lead, then they came back to us with the penalty, obviously, and then we thought we were going back into the lead with the corner. Davey McAllister worked a lovely corner there that the lads executed, and we thought, yeah, coming in with the lead, obviously got turned out by VAR, so here that first half football probably had everything, you know, we were a little bit probably despondent at half time with that. Just I suppose the emotion being so high, thinking you got to get back in front and then come back down to reality. I just said to the lads at half time, listen, we need to get back on the football and need to just get dominating possession again. Thinking European football, possession's everything, you know, and thought we'd done that second half.
Such a short turnaround from Damien's departure to these seismic games for the club. Now that you know you've got three more ties, at least the sort of next couple of months are almost planned out, that you're going to be playing European football week in, week out, does it just almost settle things down and you can focus the minds a little bit easier?
It's mad because we're moving on to a game on FAI Cup game now on Saturday, you know, and that's what we looked at. And then obviously next weekend you look to Cardiff, and that's how you move on in football. As I said at the time, and when the manager stepped away, it was like, you don't really have much time to think because it's on to the next game. I said to the lads there, listen, the manager had a huge say in there tonight, you know, like that was a team that he built, and players that came to this football club, he brought them all in, you know. So I said to the lads, listen, he got us probably here, he's gone now, make sure it's over to you, and make sure you get over the line, and have a good European football round to look forward to. And I just said after the game, though, this can't be it. Like, this can't be the end of our European run, really. This, the buzz of getting through one game. It's obviously looking to get group stages now, you know.
Well, one win in any of those games guarantees you group stage football. Like, were you talking about that already in the dressing room? Do you feel that's a realistic goal now?
I just touched on it. Obviously, it was a great night here, but we just don't want this to be the end of it, really, you know. And as you said, it opens up, I suppose that's what this game and this tie you've done for us, it opens up so many doors, like, really. And as you said, you have a possibility of really tough games, obviously, are going to be, but you have three cracks out, really, you know. And you only need to get one over the line.
How much are you enjoying this? How much have you enjoyed the last couple of weeks being the main man, being the manager, being on the sideline on a night like this, one of the biggest in probably the club's history?
Yeah, no, great. Listen, it's been brilliant, but that's about the players for me, you know. I wanted them to really show their best stuff and thought at times, and the toy we did there with that. Great for the fans. Listen, it's travelled in great numbers there. It was a brilliant atmosphere, brilliant crowd, people in the background, fans that haven't been able to come. Listen, as I said, the lads there created a lot of happiness for people there tonight.
Yeah, Talk could be hopping next Wednesday night.
Yeah, no, it'd be great. Listen, again, European football and Talk is brilliant, you know, and we're on a good run there ourselves, like in the, suppose, even in the recent times, the three games that we played last year, obviously, and this year at home, been really good. So listen, as you said, take care of Saturday and then look to Cardiff.
Well done tonight.
Cheers. Thank you.
Good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, lads.
So before we get on to Carabag and everything that that actually means, most people couldn't watch the game last night. It was difficult enough to find. It wasn't broadcast, obviously, on terrestrial television here. So what was it like? It sounded like it was pretty amazing. There was a lot going on.
Yeah, the first half was probably as entertaining a 45 minutes as I've seen all year. From the first seconds when Linfield came flying out of the blocks, they win a free kick straight away, 20 seconds in, over on the right-hand side, floated to the back post. Suddenly there's a bit of confusion in the Shell's defence, goes back over Conor Curran's head, and Matthew Fitzpatrick, the Linfield striker, is pretty much under the crossbar, and he somehow heads it over. And from there, the pace was just utterly relentless. It was a proper cup tie. There was tackles flying in. Ali Cook got a booking for, you know, a bad enough tackle. And Shells couldn't really get any great control on the ball. It just seemed to be Linfield, give it away. Shelburne, give it away. You go into counter-attack, you try and create an opportunity. And, you know, Shelburne very nearly shot themselves in the foot because Conor Kearns, their goalkeeper, 10, 12 minutes in, has the ball on the edge of his area, passes the ball straight to Fitzpatrick, who just chips it straight back over Kearns' head and it goes about an inch to the left-hand side and wide. Shells lose their captain, Mark Coyle, to injury. Then Conor Kearns himself goes off injured. So, you know, two of their key players gone pretty much inside 30, 35 minutes. But they always looked dangerous in their half. Linfield were committing so many men forward, even though there was only, I think, 6,000 Linfield supporters there and about 1,300 Shells fans. The noise felt like there was three or four times that. And the Linfield supporters, understandably, a goal down, were getting at their players to get forward. But that was given space and opportunity for Shells. And I thought Meepo played really well up front on his own. You know, when they were under a bit of pressure and they just go long, he was able to hold it up. He was able to bring Coote and Wood into it. And then Shells get their goal. And, you know, Harry Wood and Ali Coote both did really well. They were very calm, very composed inside the area. Wood shot initially. He's cleared off the line by Chris Shields, who was exceptional last night. Comes to Ali Coote. Instead of just smashing it back, takes a touch, takes it round the defender and buries it into the back of the net. And you sort of think then at 2-0, that'll just settle Shells completely. And it didn't. It just continued in this wild ride. And there was, because of the injury, 6 minutes of injury time. And Linfield get themselves an equaliser from the penalty spot. No real complaints. Tariq Wilson handles the ball. Chris Shields scores it. It's game on for like 2 minutes. And then Shells scored this real quality goal from a corner kick, a set piece straight off the training ground. As Joey O'Brien said, Dave McAllister had been working on it, where they go short to Evan Caffrey, and eventually it comes back to Kerry McEnroy. He scores, and you think, game over. And after a long wait, Andy Madley, the referee, gets the nod. Take a look at this VAR, and it seems Paddy Barrett had a hold on the jersey of the player that would have been marking Kerry McEnroy. So we go in at 1-1. You think maybe Joey O'Brien will be able to settle it. I think 15, 16 seconds into the second half, Lorcan Healy, the substitute keeper, does exactly what Conor Kearns did in the first half. He's standing on the edge of the area. He gives the ball to Morrison, the Linfield attacker, and he's clear through in goal, but somehow Healy manages to get back and make a save. And yeah, it didn't really settle at all until Linfield had the player sent off, Ben Hall, their centre-back. And again, this was just a nothing error in the middle of midfield. Linfield, under no pressure, giving it away to Meepo. He bears down a goal. He's still 30, 40 yards away, but Healy clips him, brings him down, straight red card. And from there on, I think Linfield had one shot on goal after that. Shells finally managed to settle it. And Linfield, remember, still in pre-season, they just ran out of legs completely. So the first 45 minutes, an hour, was edgier seat stuff. There was no great sense that Shells had total control of this at any stage until that last 30 minutes when Linfield's legs were gone.
An incredible reward as well, Nathan. So €750,000 for winning this tie, and they're guaranteed three more ties in Europe with Carabag up next.
Yeah, it is. There's the financial reward and there's the sporting reward. So they're guaranteed €1 million anyways. And now, as you say, you get another 700,000 in prize money. Now, you know, there is a lot of expense that comes with this, with bonuses to players, to management, that they now have to go to Azerbaijan, and all of the expense that comes with that. And part of the prize money is to cover all of those extra costs. So it's not just 700 grand that's going to go into signing new players or to refurbishing Talca Park or anything like that. But better than that, it opens the opportunity for them to go much, much deeper into one of the European competitions. So the way it'll work for them now is they play Karabag in the second qualifying round of the Champions League. Karabag are a name we know well at this stage, very much an established European team. They've just dominated the Azerbaijan League for the last decade, 15 years. They've been in Champions League group stage. They've been in Europa League last season. So they know about these days. You might remember they played Dundalk back in 2019 when the first leg was in Dundalk, and Dundalk, Pat Hooban got a late equaliser, ends up finishing 1-0, but Karabag had much too much for them in the second leg, and Karabag will be overwhelming favourites for that. But it's another big European night at Talca Park next Wednesday night. Then, obviously, if they win that, then you really start to dream. Then, if they lose that, they go to the Europa League qualifiers. If they lose that, they go to the final round of the Conference League qualifiers, into the Conference League playoffs. So, as I said to Joey O'Brien, one win in any of those games and you're automatically through to the Conference League and European football through the winter. And what happened last year was, you know, Shamrock Rovers won the qualifying round of the Europa League, which meant that they were guaranteed straight through no matter what happened in their final Europa League qualifier. And when you look at the potential teams, like there's a lot of very good teams in that Europa League side, including a lot of the better, stronger teams across Europe. You know, I think that Conference League playoff will be the one they're looking at. And we probably obsess a bit too much of the money side of it, particularly at this stage, because it goes to a whole other level if they qualify for a group stage. But I think if they, it's just the fun of what's going to happen now over the next 6 to 8 weeks of three big away trips in Europe.
I don't know if you know, do they get the money straight away?
No, I think it comes in a couple of different spells over the course of the year. I don't think it's this morning $700,000 suddenly arrives in your bank account. I think it's the way we often see it is obviously at the end of a Champions League season, and you know the winners get $100 million. I don't think it comes necessarily as you step through, but perhaps some of it does, so that, you know, again, your expenses for your private jet to Azerbaijan are covered.
You say private jet, it's like a charter. It won't be it won't be walnut panels.
Is it charter, not a private jet?
I mean, I don't know. I think private jet suggests a Lear.
Their private jet's different to Rory McIlroy's private jet, is
exactly,
what you're suggesting.
Exactly, yeah. It'll be bigger and a bit older and a bit rustier.
This is a conversation that won't be settled this morning, but it is mad that the game is unavailable for people to watch here, Nathan, isn't it? The lack of joined up thinking, because the first leg was shown, and then you're left in the lurch for the second leg. And I'm not sure what can be done about that other than a coming together of minds that this is for the greater good to actually show this game again.
Yeah, well, I'm sure RTE, who showed the first leg, will make the point that they were showing the quarterfinal of the Women's European Championship, and they're contracted to show all of those games. Could they have shown Shelburne on the RTE news channel? Perhaps they could, particularly after showing the first leg, and you sort of get people interested, yeah, and the tie exactly is still very much in the balance.
It would have been better almost if they didn't show the first leg. It's like, why are we not seeing the second leg?
Well, where there's a will, there's a way. Like,
exactly. And, you know, there's other broadcasters out there. They obviously didn't feel it was worthwhile showing this game either for some reason. But yeah, really disappointing. And, you know, I from what I can gather, I don't think the game next Wednesday night is likely to be shown either, because again, there's games in the women's European Championship. So it's disappointing, very disappointing for football fans that a game of you know, really entertaining game as it was in the end. I think if you started watching that game last night, you wouldn't have been turning it off. But listen, RTE, Declan McBennett did an extensive interview last week explaining their side of the story, and I guess the financial pressures that they're under at the moment.
Well, you say explaining, but it was restating things. It was restating things we'd heard before, as opposed to explaining. It was like, well, we told everybody in advance we weren't going to do the game. It's like, that doesn't necessarily mean that's like explaining that you're not going to do something is actually, these are the rationales and reasons behind it, as opposed to we prioritise something else. They prioritise other things over domestic football. And the notion that they don't is, it doesn't stand up to scrutiny. So that's what's going on here. RTE have prioritised other things than domestic football. They've decided that other things are higher in the pecking order. And I think Virgin, there are other broadcasters out there, but like Virgin need to make money, and they haven't been making money as an organisation over many years. So like when they're putting time and effort and energy into broadcasting the League of Ireland, it is actually proper public service broadcasting that needs to be, I think, called out and rewarded. And I think it will be rewarded over a long period of time. But when the champions of Ireland are in European football, I think it's safe to assume that the national broadcaster should be covering them.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. And I think you'd wonder, should these fixtures be on that list of sporting events that simply have to be shown across the season? Now, when we're talking about RTE making other decisions, I don't think we should include their coverage of the European Championships in that. That's, you know, part of other contracts and when you sign up to that. But they do have other options with other channels to show this game and to give people the opportunity to watch it. And it is a Champions League qualifier.
They have URC games on at the same time as league matches, and they have multiple channels. So, like, they, as I say, where there's a will, there's a way. If the will isn't there, it's like, oh, we told you in advance we weren't going to do it. All right, fair enough. Whatever you want.
It's the same story this evening with Pats, I think. So 5 o'clock in the Europa Conference League, they play Hegelman of Lithuania, also 1-0 up from the first leg. So I think it's going to be the same story again. You won't be able to see that.
I think it's on a stream. It's available on a stream. If you go onto the Pats website, they have the link to the stream, so you can watch it there. But I suspect it'll be the same story for all three teams. If Pats progress, Shamrock Rovers enter the competition next week. I suspect none of the games would be live on terrestrial television or even on pay TV in this country next week, which, considering, you know, what Shamrock Rovers did last season and showed the importance of these qualifiers and what it can ultimately lead to, and to sort of build the momentum across the summer, and when, you know, the interest in the league is at such a high right now, and the league almost stalls in a way for these because the European teams aren't playing league fixtures during this run, and, you know, they are understandably the most well-known players, the most well-known teams in the league, and suddenly they kind of disappear and they do this other thing for a month, 6 weeks, where they're off playing actually bigger games against stronger teams all over Europe, that's the bit we go, no, you're not going to see that. You're not going to see that. So I know it's a huge source of frustration to people involved in the clubs that they're not getting the chance to show these games and to be seen by a much, much bigger audience. And, you know, maybe one of the TV stations does pick this up. But as you said, like Virgin have made a significant investment in their coverage of the League of Ireland, and that's probably having an impact then on what else they can do in terms of covering these sort of matches.
Let's hear from Sean Gannon in conversation with Nathan after the game.
This was a European fixture, but just up the road, and you know, through Rovers, Dundalk, all about the trips to Eastern Europe, which is going to come now with Carabag, and you've experience from playing them with Dundalk, what, probably 6 years ago at this stage. What awaits this group over the next sort of 6 to 8 weeks now, when you're guaranteed three more ties at a minimum?
Yeah, look, and this is going to sound a bit cliche, but we have a massive game at the weekend. We have a big cup game coming up, and we need to make sure we're in the next round of the cup before we can even talk about Carabag. It's one of our ambitions this season, is to go on a cup run. And we've got a tricky game the weekend, and we need to approach that right. We need to prepare right for it. But then, obviously, what's coming with Carabag, I've experienced it before. Tough conditions over there, you know, obviously a lot of high humidity, high heat, does play a factor, but I'm sure by then we'll, you know, I'm not sure, are we home?
You're at home first as far as tomorrow, next Wednesday, yeah. So
obviously you expect another big night in Tolka. I think being part of the crowd last week is an unbelievable atmosphere. Hopefully more of the same on Wednesday, and then we'll go on Wednesday and see where we are after that.
And a word then on Joey, who's very new to management but not to football, and he sort of made that point on the first night down in Waterford that, you know, he's sort of seen everything you can see, and while all of us are probably shell-shocked at what happened with Damien's departure, he's like, we just get on with it. Has that been him over the last couple of weeks, that, listen, managers come and go?
Yeah, they do. Well, look, obviously Damien was unbelievable for us. I owe him a lot as well. He signed me, gave me an opportunity to play for this great club. Himself and the staff are here, so personally I owe that to Damien for giving me a chance to come here and be part of this, what was built here with the staff.
Did you hear from him ahead of the game?
Sorry?
Did you hear from Damien ahead of the game?
No. But I know he was obviously supporting us there. But I think since the gaffer now has come in, I've seen him say a lot's changed, but not a lot has, and it's very true. You know, the gaffer has been part of this since the start. Himself and the other staff members have built this squad since they came in, and it's been fairly seamless. We all just want to be successful for this club, and he's given us probably responsibility as players, as senior players, and it's been brilliant. It really has in the last few weeks. So now a lot has changed, but not a lot. That was the quote he used, and I'd kind of echo that. He's been brilliant for us as players since in the past few weeks, and obviously it was a turbulent kind of time, but I think he's really settled his ship, and it's been, you know, I can just say he's been amazing for us.
And a lot to look forward to over the next few weeks now as well. Enjoy, Sean.
Cheers, thanks very much.
Thanks.
That Carabag Dundalk, Carabag scored after 4 minutes in the first game. Dundalk scored a late equaliser, and then they scored early in the second game, and it was nip and tuck until the 78th minute, and then Carabag scored twice late on, which is kind of the stereotypical Irish performance in Europe over the last four decades. Technically superior side runs legs off team. But I think maybe things have changed. Can Shell's dream, or am I being completely ludicrous?
Oh, I think it is. It's probably a bit of a stretch, considering Dundalk by then were such an experienced European side. They had become the dominant force in Irish football. Whereas, you know, Shells, it seems for a lot of these players, these are new experiences. These are new occasions. Sean Gannon, obviously, one of the exceptions, maybe not an enormous amount of European experience in big games like this. And also, while definitely things have settled very quickly under Joey O'Brien, and he hasn't lost a game yet since he came in a few weeks ago, you know, I think all of the turmoil in the background and the fact that, you know, they're sitting mid-table in the league suggests that this is going to be a right old struggle. But the key is to just get a result in Talca, make it as noisy, as difficult, as uncomfortable as you possibly can for Carabag. And that is, you know, going back 6 years ago at this stage, so it's a very different looking Carabag side. You know, they're a team that, you know, the season before last got to the last 16 of the Europa League. They were in the Europa League again last season. They played Spurs, they played Ajax, got well beaten by both. But, you know, they'll come and they'll look at this tie and expect it's a foregone conclusion. And maybe that there's an opportunity in that as well for Shelburne, that, you know, Carabag might be a little bit complacent around all of this. And obviously they're in a different part of their season. I think they've been away in a camp over the last few weeks playing pre-season friendlies as well, Carabag. So, you know, there's an opportunity maybe there for Shelburne in the first leg to keep the tie alive. But, you know, you'd be talking about one of the biggest upsets in the history of Irish football if Shells can go and win this.
Okay.
We're up and running here, Nathan. Phil Mickelson has just moved on to one under after two. Joins Jakob Olesen also after two. Nikolai Højgaard is three holes ahead, one under after five. Padraig Harrington, as you well know, was the first man to lead 2025 Open. He is now one over after five. And Tom McGibbon, where is he gone?
He's back to one over.
He's after back, five, yeah, as well. He just birdied the fifth.
He just birdied the fifth. How are the excitement levels? Simmering?
Yeah, good. Good. It's been a long week. The fact that McIlroy and Lowry sort of came in early on Monday and did all their press stuff, then you're kind of just waiting for it all to get started. And yeah, it's going to be a long week and a long day today, from Harrington teeing off at 6:30 this morning to probably post 8:00 this evening by the time Rory McIlroy finishes his opening round. But yeah, just can't wait to see how the course holds up, who emerges as the challengers, even, you know, Phil Mickelson there, a former winner who, you know, has obviously gone a different way in his life and his career in recent years. It'll be interesting to see what sort of reaction Phil would get if he could get himself into contention. And so often, some of those more experienced guys turn up at an Open Championship and they can plot their way around a golf course and they can get themselves into the mix over the weekend. The most famous one, of course, been Tom Watson back in 2009. Darren Clarke as well. Now, Darren Clarke, let's remember, was probably 10 years younger than Phil Mickelson is now. He was early 40s.
Was he?
So I've had a different look at, you know, maybe what Darren Clarke did as we sort of head towards that.
Oh, now you're like, hey, he's a young man, as you're the same age as him.
Exactly. Why can't he achieve great things in his life?
You're in way better shape.
Some may say similar. Not quite as tanned as Darren Clarke is. But it's something very early stages so far. But yeah, Mickelson will be a very interesting storyline. He seems to spend more time on X at the moment, having a pop at the governor of California and supporting all of Trump's policies than playing a lot of golf. So that's sort of where Phil is in his life. And it's a real shame what's happened with Phil post LIV and even around the start of LIV. You know, he was the people's champion. Like when he won that PGA and the crowds coming up 18 and one of the most liked, one of the most recognizable figures in golf, just such a great entertainer. And then the way he went around LIV and his efforts to, you know, split the game of golf and, you know, be one of the major reasons that everything that's gone on over the past 3 or 4 years has happened, and doing it, it seems, for, you know, personal gain as much as anything else because of the financial situation he found himself in, I think he's gone down in a lot of people's estimation. So I'd be interested over the weekend to see, you know, does he have that love of the crowd again if he gets himself in the mix for this?
I have a sartorial query for you, Nathan. Lucas Herbert of Australia and Cameron Smith as well are both wearing hoodies. It's very distracting on a full swing.
That the hood might flop in a certain direction.
In eye line, yeah.
No, I think the hood is sort of... I often wonder this when I'm going playing golf as to what's an acceptable hoodie to wear.
Oh, you mean, like, you mean in terms of etiquette?
So obviously you're allowed to wear a hoodie. I think they're sort of generally that little bit lighter, and maybe as a result of that, Colin, maybe there's not as much movement in the hood as there would be in a regular hoodie.
I was silently admiring how well fitted it was on Lucas Herbert there.
Expensive is what you mean, Colin.
But I can't help but think, Nathan, that it would be swinging in the open air of Royal Port Rush. It could cost them the Open.
So who are you talking about, yeah?
8:06 a.m.
I don't think. Listen, you spend the next while watching their swing and see is there excessive movement of the hood, and then maybe send a message through and we can get word out that this could become an impediment for them over the course of the weekend. No, I think I like the hoodie look. I think it adds a little bit of something. You know, it's a bit more modern than what we would have seen before, and obviously it's a bit cooler. This morning, yesterday was a sensational day at Port Rush. Oh, yeah. It was. Oh. Beautiful, warm. Potter Carrington was eating his 99s. He said he came and spoke to the Irish media for a little while. Said that the 99s at Port Rush are the best of any Open Championship.
Oh.
It was high praise from Harrington, who's, you know, had one everywhere. He was very nervous. Very, very nervous about this morning and that opening tee shot. He said he'd been asked a couple of times would he hit the first tee shot at the Open, and he sort of said, no, not for me. And he felt, you know what, it's that Port Rush, maybe now's the time for me to go and do it. But because it's such a difficult tee shot, and then he was, you know, been asked about Rory and who'd be more nervous on that first tee shot. You were Rory, considering what happened to Rory in 2019. He was like, whoa, don't be reminding me of that. But he actually had a beautiful tee shot. Rory, I don't know if you saw this yesterday, and I'd heard this on Monday, that Rory, when he stood up on the first hole on Monday morning at 7 o'clock, put it straight out of bounds on the right-hand side. And it was the left-hand side back in 2019. But Brad Faxon, who works with Rory on his putting, said that he'd gone out of bounds as well on Tuesday. So, listen, uh-oh. Get it out of your system. Get it out of your system good and early. People who were following me yesterday said he seems to be playing very well. Maybe not perfect off the tee. And, you know, Harrington was doing as he does brilliantly, sort of giving a complete run through of the course and making that point that, you know, if you can get lucky here off the tee and you can get a perfect lie, or you may never see your ball again and suddenly you're scrapping for bogey and one hole can undo your entire tournament, as it did for McIlroy. So, God, this is one of the most anticipated tee shots there has been in a long time. And, you know, I think whatever he can do to just find the middle of that fairway and keep it away from left or right, because there's white stakes right, there's white stakes left. Just get underway, get out of that first hole with a par and move on with your life.
3:10 this afternoon, there's storm warnings in place in between, so we'll see exactly what happens. Nathan, good stuff. Thanks a million.
Thanks, lads.